Winchester Talking News, Friday, the 10th of December, 2021. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful, and your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 10th of December have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are High Street Proposals, GP Staff Suffer Vaccine Abuse, and Teenager Recovering After Crocodile Attack. May we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather!
High Street Proposals. Civic chiefs are pressing on with their efforts to boost the High Street in Winchester, including a light festival in the new year. They also aim to energise the Busket Lane area at the back of the bus station in conjunction with the revamping of the empty Friarsgate surgery. The GP surgery is due to be demolished, and Busket Lane will be rebranded as Busket Yard and turned into a public space for events and performances. Sue Robbins, Corporate Head of Engagement, told the Business and Housing Policy Committee about the High Street Priority Plan. Officers are in discussion about the Light Festival to be held in February. Ms. Robbins said, "We are working on Busket Yard on how we can activate that space and talking to various partners on what we could have there as events or activities to attract people to it." Contrary to some opinion, vacancy rates in Winchester High Street shops are relatively low. Nationally, vacancies run at 14.5%, but 10.3% locally. Pre-COVID, the local figure was 6.3%. Ms. Robbins acknowledged that some businesses have closed, but added a few stores have moved, taking on better locations or larger spaces, which shows there is still commitment to being in the city. The Chronicle reported that Dingham's Cook Shop is closing in the new year because the rents on its council-owned property are too high. The council has also been criticised for moving to evict a Chinese food shop and gift shop, both said to be profitable, from King's Walk. Neither fit into the artistic vibe the council wants to create. Conservative councillor Hugh Lumby described Busket Yard as Winchester's best-kept secret. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, portfolio holder for housing and asset management, said of the demolition of Friarsgate, "We have started consultation, and it has proved to be more complicated than we thought, proving that Chinese walls are genuine." I don't know what Chinese walls are, so I apologise. "We cannot tell our own planners what to do. Demolition will go to planners after Christmas, and a couple of months after that we will be ready to go. It will link into Busket Yard and transform the spaces. I have been asked to keep the brambles, though." Ms. Robbins said officers were looking at addressing concerns about the shabby appearance of parts of the centre. Other ideas include jazzing up the dead space of the Debenhams department store, which has been empty for several months. Meanwhile, the City Council Cabinet is set to approve the outline business case for the second attempt to redevelop the Silver Hill areas, also known as the Central Winchester Regeneration. There will be a further report in next week's Hampshire Chronicle.
And the second headline, over to you, Noel.
GP staff suffer vaccine abuse. Winchester medical staff are facing daily abuse as patients clamber to get COVID booster jabs. At least one city surgery reports constant aggression from people unhappy at the time taken to be seen. One surgery manager, Philip Hayden, is urging patients to have more understanding during the jab rollout. Mr. Hayden at St. Paul's Surgery said it is verbal mainly, over the phone or in person, shouty, sweary, demanding, refusing to leave, just all unpleasant. I urge patients to wait their turn to be invited and to be appreciative of the health service in difficult times. Abusive and threatening behaviour towards anyone will not be tolerated and will not make a difference to gaining your appointment sooner. We work to rules, not who shouts the loudest. Mr. Hayden paid tribute to the staff and volunteers helping with the vaccinations. I would like to publicly thank anyone, staff, volunteers, supporters, who have helped make the Winchester PCN Badger Farm Community Centre COVID vaccination hub the successful centre it is today. I think the resilience and bravery of all is outstanding, considering we're a year on into the project, which for many is on top of their busy day jobs and lives. He said nationally most practices are moving towards recording calls. It comes as the vaccine rollout surpassed 106,000 doses in Winchester as St Clement's, St Paul's, Friarsgate and Badger Farm Community Centre work in collaboration to vaccinate the Winchester population, administering on average 3,200 vaccines per week, dependent on stock levels. But an issue of availability of some vaccines has arisen. A Winchester patient, who wishes not to be named, has found a flaw in the system when booking the vaccine. He said all three surgeries have a good program in place, as well as Badger Farm, but it is based entirely on Pfizer, which some patients are unable to have due to a history of serious allergic reactions. The patient had been refused the Pfizer booster, with no other options available as an alternative. Some patients were referred to the allergy clinic at Southampton General Hospital, but vaccines were limited, with some stock taking weeks or months to arrive. He said his only option was to book an appointment or attend a walk-in centre and hope they have AstraZeneca on the day, which is a fundamental flaw in the system, as booster jabs are constantly urged, but there is no guaranteed way of those not suitable for Pfizer to get the jab. Mr. Hayden said, "The booster program is largely Pfizer, that's all we do in Winchester, with a few mass centres providing Moderna occasionally. There will be very few patients who can't have Pfizer. These patients, as you say, are referred to the allergy clinic and sourced the appropriate dose and given under stricter measures than we are allowed to administer in the community for obvious reasons. This is outside of our control." Friarsgate have reported no problems. Managing partner Mark Dryden praised his patients during the vaccine rollout, saying, "We are finding it rewarding. We had a huge tin of biscuits delivered, posts on social media, and staff are complimented." The Chronicle has also asked St Clement's for comment.
The third headline story, please, Deborah.
This is teenager recovering after crocodile attack. An Andover teenager has said she's very, very lucky to have survived a crocodile attack while on holiday in Zambia. Amelie Osborne-Smith was left fighting for her life after the 10-foot reptile dragged her into a death roll after she'd been resting her leg over the side of the boat, her father told Mail Online last week. She'd been enjoying a day of whitewater rafting on the Zambezi River below Victoria Falls when she was attacked by the 10-foot crocodile. Miss Osborne-Smith had been on a gap year after finishing her A-levels at St Swithin School. Her father, former Army officer Brent Osborne-Smith, told Mail Online, "She's a very sensible girl, but on this occasion she was being guided by the rafting company, and it was on their advice." Miss Osborne-Smith described how she expected to lose her foot, but described how it was such a relief to be told that it was fine and that she was going to be able to walk again. Speaking from her hospital bed in a video by Medland Hospital, she said, "You don't really think in that situation. Obviously, people say you see your life flash before your eyes or whatever, but you don't. You just think, how do I get out of this situation? And your brain just goes into overdrive and you just think how to get out. But I was just very, very lucky. When the accident happened, I fully accepted the fact that I was going to lose my foot. I accepted that and I'd said to all my friends, it's fine, I've lost my foot, I'm still alive. And then I was told my foot is fine and I'm going to be able to walk again. And it's such a relief. The 18-year-old who attended St Swithin School in Winchester was on a whitewater rafting trip during a gap year visit to Zambia, where her grandmother owns a farm, according to The Sun. The paper reported that she was rescued by friends who'd punched the crocodile before dragging her back in a boat. She was flown by helicopter to an aid post in nearby Livingston, and then to the capital, Lusaka, 240 miles away, where surgeons managed to save the foot, The Sun reported. Miss Osborne Smith continued, "Don't let an incident like this put you off, because it doesn't happen often."
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices and then Christian comment, letters to the editor, first person, and also letter from Westminster. And then we've got editorial comment, and then we're going to finish with Belgarum Diary, and finally, items of general news. Heather will start with the death notices.
Cowan, Stuart Cowan, passed away peacefully in Winchester Hospice on the 3rd of December 2021, aged 90 years. Dagley, Jesse Dagley, passed away peacefully on the 29th of November, aged 97. Ganaway, Audrey Ganaway, passed away peacefully on the 28th of November 2021, aged 99 years. Harris, Judy Lerwell, peacefully at her home on the 22nd of November, aged 68 years. Kirby, Pauline Ann Kirby, passed away peacefully at Mountbatten Hospice, West End, on the 19th of November, aged 70 years. Lawless, Madeline Edith Lawless, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 29th of November, aged 88 years. Longman, Trevor Longman, passed away peacefully at Brendan Care Home in Alton on Thursday the 2nd of December, aged 89. Maxted, Barbara Ann Maxted, sadly passed away peacefully on Saturday the 20th of November, aged 88. Minter, Guy Richard Minter, peacefully passed away, aged 89, at home in Four Marks on the 30th of November. Steele, Dr. Robert Steele, CBE, died on the 26th of November, aged 101, at Sunrise Senior Living in Winchester. And Westwood, Maureen Elizabeth Westwood, died peacefully at home in Charlotte Lodge, aged 87.
And Noel's got Christian comment.
Yes. Nigel Hemmings, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church, writes about Dealer in Hope. I've just finished listening to a fascinating podcast series, Renegades Born in the USA. Features several hours of wide-ranging conversations between rock superstar Bruce Springsteen and former President Barack Obama. Although an unlikely pair at first glance, these two giants of US culture met initially on Obama's campaign trail in 2008, parted together in the White House from time to time, and then, since Obama left office in 2016, seemed to have become firm friends. The differences between them are obvious, but as they shared in the series, they have much more in common than you would perhaps initially expect. Both had difficult relationships with their fathers growing up, which affected them well into adulthood. Both share an admiration for strong mothers who raised them and their equally strong wives. Both talk movingly about raising their own children and about their own fallibilities despite the obvious successes. What I found most inspiring was to hear two globally influential leaders in their field talking with such honesty about how they were affected by the images and role models of masculinity they had inherited and the cultural values of the society they've grown up in. This kind of emotional literacy is rarely expressed in public, but when it is so refreshing and so releasing. Both men are personally vulnerable and very real about the many challenges they have faced and those which they see in their world. But despite all of that, they clearly also share an infectious sense of optimism which looks beyond the current situation and strives for a better future. In the words of Napoleon, they're both leaders who deal in hope. The Bible is scattered with references to hope. It's impossible to put your faith in God without believing that there is more to life than this ephemeral world. Christians believe in a glorious future where the pain and sufferings of our present age are overcome with the beauty and power of God's kingdom. We also believe that the signs of that future are visible in today's broken society through the peace and presence of God and the practical love and actions of Christ's body, the Church. John records that Jesus told his disciples, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." John 16:33. His sacrifice on the cross was the ultimate embodiment of hope for troubled times. As we prepare to celebrate his arrival on the earth this Christmas, let's become dealers in hope ourselves, viewing our current circumstances in the context of God's bigger picture. As Jethro sings to Moses in the Prince of Egypt film, "Look at your life through heaven's eyes." Whatever you're going through today, in the words of the Apostle Paul, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Romans 15:13.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 11 letters this week, and Deborah will start.
Yes, the first letter is from Andy Lye, and it's comments on the small businesses and shops in Winchester, and it's entitled Action Plan. "Sir, I and my Conservative colleagues are disappointed by the recent decision of the Liberal Democrat administration of Winchester City Council to evict two popular viable businesses from King's Walk. We are further dismayed by their refusal to offer a sensible temporary rent adjustment to businesses in the city's council-owned properties, which has already led to another long-term viable and popular business, Dingham's Cookshop, to announce their forthcoming closure. As the local economy fights its way out of the COVID-19 pandemic, our council must put its own interests aside and do whatever it can to keep Winchester alive. Forcing businesses out of their premises and maintaining unreasonable high rents are not the actions of a responsible landlord or local authority and are not what local residents want to see. I am calling for the City Council to immediately take the following steps. 1. Guarantee businesses of King's Walk will not be evicted until they've been found similar city centre premises at equal or lower rent. 2. Reduce all commercial rents for city centre properties the council owns by 20% for a period of not less than a year, with a vote of full council to decide whether or not to extend the policy at the end of the period. 3. Set up a business liaison forum where local businesses who occupy council-owned premises will be able to communicate directly with the council decision-makers, using the same format as the King's Barton Forum. 4. Require the portfolio holder for asset management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, and the portfolio holder for economic recovery, Councillor Martin Todd, to present an action plan at the next meeting of full council on how they intend to bring the above steps forward. If the Lib Dems carry out the actions above, I will support them, and perhaps they can start to repair the damage they've caused to our local economy and rebuild the trust they've lost from Winchester Business's community. I believe there will be full cross-party support for these steps and hope the administration sets politics aside and joins us in getting Winchester's economy back on track. Andy Lai, Francis Copps, Winchester.
And Terry Gould writes on a related topic of Silver Hill. So the City Council Cabinet on November the 22nd gave us another Central Winchester Regeneration Dog and Pony Show, virtually the same presentation and graphics as the previous meeting. It was a painstaking exposition of process, but as before, woefully short on progress. There were many references to the supplementary planning document, but nothing about how far the Cabinet was deviating from the policies in that document. In an earlier meeting, we were assured that the very defunct Friarsgate Medical Centre would be demolished in the summer. Instead, we have a few benches and empty planters behind the old centre, and the gate to Buscott Lane has been opened, a new pathway, but no reason as yet to use it. And somewhat alarmingly, the idea is to demolish the structure but leave the footprint, which will make it difficult to reopen and restore the Lower Brook area. King's Walk aspirations were voiced again, or as uses in the meantime were suggested until King's Walk is demolished. We don't know the cost of those uses in the meantime. Much is made of the procurement process to find a developer. Well, reading between the lines, the consultants, JLL, will do most of the selection. When will anything finite appear? So that we, the rate payers, can comment on what will maybe be done someday. Mention was made of the quite good idea proposed by the University of Southampton to further develop the art school, using the former police station site and extending on into River Park, part of Winchester's vital green lung. The proposal includes development of more performance space. Perhaps it would be competing with the proposed King's Walk performance space, and together give us more space than performers. This development will need a strong link with the CWR to create a great path through both areas. So, Cabinet, please try much harder to actually get something done on the ground. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And G.N. Barrett says, stop plastic. Sir, environmentalists and councils want an end to the amount of plastic waste thrown about everywhere. They tend to blame the public, who are the last handler of such. However, if an end of plastic waste is very necessary, then stop companies manufacturing the stuff. That's the only way to put an end to the wastage. Glass does not contaminate the products like plastic does. G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
The next letter is from Hugh Saxon, and he's called it Disabled Bays. Sir, parking spaces for disabled drivers have a valuable purpose, but to maintain their value, they must be clearly labelled. In Stockbridge and elsewhere, this is done by using the words disabled on the edge of the space. But over time, the lettering is gradually degraded as cars drive over it. It makes more sense to have the wheelchair logo in the middle of the space, away from the wheels, and preferably in yellow. Can Hampshire County Council be persuaded to make this the standard labelling? Watch these spaces. Hugh Saxon, Horton Road, Stockbridge.
Another letter from Andrew Beadle, this time about traffic gridlock. Like other residents, I have received a letter from Hampshire County Council regarding an online survey on Winchester movement strategy proposals. This arrived on Saturday, when the city centre was once again gridlocked by the usual pre-Christmas traffic affecting buses, emergency vehicles and other cars alike. Before we start planning cycle and walking networks, which will not happen for several years, why is nothing being done now to try to reduce the volume of pre-Christmas Saturday traffic, which happens every year? On Saturday, I saw a road sign in Eastgate Street, which said the city centre car parks were full. But there were spaces at Park and Ride. But by the time drivers saw the sign, it was already too late. I don't think there is sufficient financial incentive for drivers to consider Park and Ride at busy times. The differential between the daily charge of £3.50 and parking for between 2 and 3 hours in a city centre car park is less than £1. Drivers need a larger financial incentive to use the Park and Ride, as well as being told well in advance that the city centre is congested. Perhaps the Park and Ride charge on pre-Christmas Saturdays could be reduced to £1, or even made free, with the revenue loss being made up by higher charges in the city centre. This reduced or free charge, and the fact that the city centre is congested, would need to be advertised well ahead on the major routes into Winchester, including the M3. Andrew Beadle, Milestone Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And Chris Gillam writes rather crossly about greenwash bore. Sir, I wasted an hour and a half of my life last week tuned into what was described as a Hampshire COP26 summit. One could imagine that the organisers might have expected that such a title would attract a thinking and concerned audience. In fact, it turned out to be a Conservative Party greenwash propaganda fest, patronising, self-congratulatory and ill-informed peddling of twaddle. That a few hapless and well-intentioned speakers had somehow been drawn into this travesty of a webinar did not make up for the blah, blah, blah of Minister Rebecca Powell, the usual world-beating cant, and Hampshire MPs Mary Miller, Caroline Dynage and Suella Braverman. I could not endure the thing long enough to hear Flick Drummond and Steve Brine. Then I pick up something that came through the door from the Liberal Democrats called Spark. Not an auspicious title as the planet starts to burn. This informed me that the Conservatives are failing miserably to meet their commitments on tackling global warming. Obviously true, but then Lib Dems take climate change seriously, really? A Lib Dem council has voted for expansion of Southampton Airport. Winchester's Lib Dems majority city council has just approved an expansion of car parking, which will have the effect of multiplying car trips and increasing carbon emission. It backs a Winchester movement strategy, which appears now to be mostly about classic road builders predict and provide, making provision for as much as 66% extra parking. Not the least sign that either the City Council or the County Council are seriously addressing emissions from road transport in their climate emergency action plans. There are shades of hypocrisy in the main political parties when pots and kettles compete to condemn the other's blackness, but the thin shade of greenwash is all the rest of us see. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
The next letter's from Roger Malin. It's about an unhappy shopping experience. Sir, Aldi might be the cheapest place to shop for food for most, but it's debatable when it comes to the aged and infirm. A friend of mine, who's had a knee operation and is not as nimble as she once was, has incurred a £40 fine for exceeding the one-hour time limit imposed in the car park. She's a loyal Aldi customer who values her independence and has a blue badge, but this is irrelevant as it's a private car park. She limits her main shop to once a fortnight to save petrol, so it took her over an hour to do her shopping, which came to in excess of £70. I appreciate that it was not in line with good German efficiency as she ambled around the store, taking her time, but she is a customer and her needs should be met. This is what happens when it's left to computers or contractors to enforce dubious rules and regulations. On receiving the ticket in the post, she then had to make a return trip of 6 miles to try and resolve the issue. She described the staff's attitude as indifferent, with someone called Malcolm taking the ticket off her and saying, "I'll put it in the system." This has left her with no proof of the action she's taken, and she doesn't know if the ticket has been rescinded. Her limited mobility and her age would have been obvious to Aldi's staff, so a more sympathetic and positive response would have been appreciated. Fortunately, all the other major stores have at least 2-hour limit, and £40 buys a lot of food. Beware, Christmas is coming and things can only get worse. Being cheap is not everything. Roger Malin, Goring Field, Tegdown, Winchester.
Tom James writes, Pensioners' Deaths. On Thursday, December the 2nd, a wreath was placed adjacent to the War Memorial, High Street, West End, Hampshire, by Wessex Region of the National Pensioners Convention, the NPC, in memory of the extra 63,000 people, mostly pensioners, who died during the winter months of 2020 to 2021. The registered 63,000 deaths excluded mention of the coronavirus on the death certificate, but were due to cold-related illnesses. These facts were issued by the government's Office for National Statistics on November the 27th. Respiratory diseases continue to be the leading cause of excess winter deaths. Many older people live in homes that fall below the decent home standard, impacting on their health and well-being, and who struggle financially to keep warm and eat properly. NPC Wessex Region also acknowledges with sadness the more than 40,000 pensioners and over 200 NHS staff and care workers who have died during the coronavirus pandemic. The National Pensioners Convention, the largest voluntary organisation for pensioners run by pensioners, campaigns for an end to fuel poverty, safe and warm housing, and a national care service. Tom James, Secretary, NPC Wessex Region, Gordon Road, Fareham.
Mrs. Jane Grigson regrets lost times. Sir, D.O. Wilkinson's letter last week will surely strike a chord with more senior readers, re the loss of many of Winchester's choicest snack bars and cafeteria. And for those d'un certain âge like myself, who have occasional need to rest Shank's pony and enjoy the unfashionable pastime of just watching the world go by. Excuse me. Some of your readers may, for example, remember Corova's, the Italian cafe at the bottom of the High Street, which provided my generation with their first tastes of the then exotic Italian espresso milk bar during the 1950s. This was where I met my late husband-to-be Stanley, who, with his now long-gone greaser pals and their then spotless Triumph motorbikes, congregated near the statue of King Alf on Saturday mornings before doing the ton on the Moorstead Road, helmetless in the days before health and safety went mad. I still remember Stanley's excited smiles during our courting whenever he invited me to ride his powerful machine and the feeling of the wind in my hair. Today, what a sad state of affairs. Where can one park in Winchester, let alone obtain a simple pastry, pasty or cheese puff? Let alone, as your correspondent laments, a baked potato along with a range of good old-fashioned, sensible and well-chosen toppings, ideally in ramekins, along a nice cup of tea served with a smile. Not only that, but now we have to contest with the over-amplification of the Nolans, or whatever music du jour is. One can hardly hear oneself think, let alone speak. Instead, youngsters graze on burgers et al, and our generation have to wade knee-deep through the discarded bento box, sushi, noodle, Thai curry, and myriad other exotic food rubbish strewn around the streets. Even the cathedral's Christmas market is not immune. Now serving not British bangers but currywurst, whatever that is. Was it not so long ago that Winchester was the target of Germans during the Blitz? So come on, Winchester cafes. How about catering for us oldies too? And damn the washing up. Mrs. Jane Grigson, The Grange, Oldswood.
And the next letter is from Daphne Deer, and another unhappy shopper. Sir, 2 weekend evenings in succession, I've shopped in Tesco in Eastern Lane and been treated with complete disrespect by the checkout staff. Last weekend, when I reached the checkout, there sat a young lad looking bored and chamming chewing gum in a most off-putting manner. This lad managed to serve me without once either looking at me or speaking a single word to me as he shoved my shopping along to where I waited. When it came to paying, he sat there with his head down and gave me the receipt without so much as a nod or a thank you. This evening was the turn of a young girl to try out her practised rudeness on me. She spoke not a word to me, but began shoving my shopping along as fast as she could, with her back almost turned on me, so that all the items were banging together as I tried to get them as quickly as I could and put them away. When finished, I waited to be told the amount I owed, but no. Instead, she glared at me and ordered me to put your club card in, which I did. Finally, she pushed a receipt at me in the dismissive manner she could muster, and squatted there impatiently, waiting for me to be gone. I did, however, challenge her about her rudeness, and later spoke to the duty manager, who was very sympathetic and apologetic about the behaviour of the staff, and assured me that they were trained to treat customers with respect. I did nothing, absolutely nothing at all, to offend either of these checkout assistants, except grow old and have grey hair. That's all it takes nowadays. Daphne Dear, Fairdown Close, Winchester.
David James writes about a shoddy welcome as well. On Monday, I tried to walk from the ninth floor of the Chesil multi-storey car park down the staircase. It was blocked by rubbish and three shopping trolleys jammed between the handrails. I used an alternative staircase, the upper floors of which were covered in litter and the walls with graffiti. Not a very nice welcome for our Christmas visitors. David James, Southview Road, Oliver's Battery.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of the people who were involved in that. And now we've got First Person, and it's by Khaled Aziz this week, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, and his title is Enough's Enough. When Nye Bevan and the post-war Labour government launched the NHS back in 1948, Britain's health was in a parlous state, particularly in rural areas, and especially in desperate pit villages in places like Wales and Yorkshire. Then you didn't trouble the doctor unless it was really necessary. As an adult, you had to be at death's door. Access to medical care was a privilege, not a right. Pre-NHS, all doctors were self-employed. They charged what they like, and their fees were way beyond the means of most of the population. High-minded and socially concerned doctors overcame this medical apartheid by offering the poor reduced fees or waiving them entirely in cases of real hardship. In essence, the rich ill subsidised the sick poor. The new NHS regularised this arrangement through the tax system, but to get buy-in from the doctors, Bevan famously had to stuff their mouths with gold. One of the great advantages of a socialised medical system is it is much easier to develop public health initiatives, and so throughout the 1950s and 60s, poor children were nourished with NHS milk powder, cod liver oil, and orange juice laced with extra vitamins. I well remember standing in my underpants with a bunch of other kids peering through dark goggles at a sunray lamp for half an hour once a week. The room was always freezing, and although the ultraviolet light produced probably stopped us getting rickets, it did nothing for the endless colds we all seemed to develop through the winter. Improving general health was a boost to our collective immune systems, although in those days we never knew the phrase. However, the average immune system, no matter how well developed, was no match for some of the virulent diseases that remained in our society as a hangover from Victorian times. Such diseases, just like modern COVID, multiplied rapidly in dense urban areas. Diseases such as chickenpox, measles, diphtheria, whooping cough, and polio. The first two you simply caught to gain immunity. Mums brought along their uninfected children to chickenpox parties to catch it, and so tick one more threat off the worry list. The last three were much more serious. I can remember a number of people at school who, having survived polio, and many didn't, walked with a permanent limp. Polio was no respecter of class or social position, and famously, Michael Flanders, one half of the hilarious duo Flanders and Swan, their modern-day equivalent would be Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie, was a wheelchair user until he died in his early 50s. Thankfully, new vaccines were on hand to suppress and ultimately eliminate these diseases, certainly from the developed nations. There was no hesitation on anyone's part. You only had to witness the ghastly sounds coming from a baby struggling for breath courtesy of whooping cough to reach out for anything that would make a difference. Which is why it's so galling to hear the BBC report that 90% of those in intensive care with COVID are non-vaccinated. Often these vaccine refuseniks are among the poor, some young women concerned about an effect of the vaccine on a pregnancy, current or future. Apparently, this has been fuelled by fake news on the internet warning of alleged risks. Yet amongst the same group of youngsters are plenty who are happy to dismiss the risk of taking ecstasy, one serious adverse reaction per 900 pills, or smoking cannabis, where those having tried it between the ages of 18 and 24 are 2.5 times more likely to be diagnosed with irreversible schizophrenia in later life. As the young might say, these people need to get a life and get vaccinated straight away, and not through their own selfishness, queue-jump scarce NHS resources, or deny cancer sufferers or transplant candidates their lives. Enough's enough.
And now we've got a letter from Westminster, read by Deborah.
Yes, this is written by Flick Drummond, Meon Valley MP. This week has seen the Nationality and Borders Bill return to Parliament just as there is increasing public concern about the number of people coming across the Channel in small boats. The tragic recent loss of life when one of these boats sank has also put into sharp focus that we must break the business model of the unscrupulous and vile people traffickers who are making millions out of this illegal and dangerous trade. Our asylum and immigration laws are not fit for purpose, and this bill aims to make them much better. The UK has always been a safe haven for those who need refuge. The recent events in Afghanistan and how we openly gave refuge to thousands of Afghans is the proof of this generosity. However, there is a difference between economic migrants and refugees, and at the moment it is difficult to ascertain that or to take action to remove those who have no valid reason to come to Britain. The bill aims to focus on helping those in need, not on the ability to pay smugglers vast sums. It proposes jail terms for those who people smuggle will be increased to life imprisonment. Those with no right to be in the UK should be removed without the substantial delays which are now commonplace. Those in genuine need will be protected. Another proposal is to implement Electronic Travel Authorisation, ETA, similar to the United States ESTA programme, to block the entry of those who present a threat to the UK. These are radical reforms, but we need partnership with other countries to help stop this trafficking and the loss of life. I have every sympathy for everyone who wants a better life, but that must be balanced with the United Kingdom's own needs. Taking more people in danger directly from those regions is one good option. We are then helping those in most need, and we can control the numbers better while working with other countries to find safe refuge for the persecuted. Another area that can help the situation is foreign aid, and I'd like to see the United Kingdom go back to the 0.7% of GDP target as soon as our public finances allow us. Aid in areas that need it lessen the pull factors for economic migrancy. There are no easy solutions to this problem of migrants crossing the Channel. The bill does much to improve the situation, but other factors like war or regime changes make a difference, and they often happen thousands of miles from us. And on a different topic, it was Small Businesses Saturday, SBS, last weekend, and I was out and about across the Meon Valley shopping locally and supporting our retailers as they recover from the pandemic. I always engage with SBS, but I'd like to say that independent shops and services need our support all year round. Otherwise, we lose them and the vibrancy of town and village centres. In Meon Valley, we have butchers, bakers, and at least candle sellers, and much more in Bishop's Waltham, Wickham, Denmead, Waterlooville, and many other places. This is my last letter from Westminster until the new year. I very much hope this Christmas will be much better than the last one. I hope you are able to see family and friends.
Heather's got editorial comment.
It's headlined, "The Oafs at Doctor's Reception Desks." A Winchester doctor's surgery practice manager has reported the chronic abuse suffered by his staff from patients angry that their demands for attention are not being met quickly enough. Reception staff are being shouted at and insulted because patients cannot get their own way. The rush for vaccinations seems to have worsened things. This is unacceptable, and all phone calls should be recorded and action taken. Surgeries should ban these oafs from their lists. It is yet another example of the me-first mentality that is exhibited by the less intelligent members of society who think the world revolves around them. They are more than aware of their rights, but struggle to recognise the word responsibility. Sad to say, it is something that has worsened in the 25 years since the internet arrived and is made worse by social media. Too many people think they exist in some sort of bubble that gives them the power to be rude with impunity. They do not. This is nothing to do with age. The older generation cannot blame the young, as most offenders fall into the category of middle age.
And Noel has got an alternative look at the news because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, I've got one long item. How many bus stops does a street need? Winchester is full of mysteries. What did happen to the bones of King Alfred the Great? Who made the mizmaz on St Catherine's Hill? And why are there three bus stops within 50 yards of each other on City Road? The black shelters glower along the road like a row of rotten teeth. Perhaps the answer is the fact that the bus stop shelters are essentially advertising boards which accrue income from business, in this case, McDonald's. The shelters are operated by Clear Channel UK, which according to Wikipedia is the British division of iHeartMedia, a global media conglomerate based in San Antonio, Texas, United States of America. They are the biggest provider of out-of-doors advertising in the country. City Road is one of the most important roads in the city, on a par with Southgate Street, Stockbridge Road and Hyde Street. In the recent past, it has several unsightly businesses, including a tyre workshop and petrol station. But as property prices have increased, one result is that those businesses have been edged out and the street has returned to the wide thoroughfare it once was. As a main route into the city centre from the station, the bus stops hardly add to the quality of the street scene. Belgarum asked for comments from the City Council as the planning authority, the county council responsible for the transport and Clear Channel 2. Neither of the councils got back in time, but a spokesman for Clear Channel said, "I would strongly recommend you get in contact with Winchester City Council with questions about locations and quantities of shelters. They own the contract for the city's bus shelter network and will have instructed Clear Channel on the locations required and granted all of the planning permissions. I'm sure they're packed with drizzly days during peak travel times. This is something the council or bus operators could confirm." He added the company was continually working with councils across the country to relocate shelters or to install new shelters if the street scene is being changed or redeveloped. "It's something we're very happy to do and would be keen to engage with the council to align with any redevelopment plans." And this is accompanied by an old black and white photograph from 1920s showing City Road, a wide road with about two cars on it and a couple of cycles, and no bus shelters. And then next to it is a modern picture of City Road with three bus shelters. I don't comment anymore.
lighting up time ends on Friday the 10th of December at 7:57 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. And on Wednesday the 15th of December, it ends at 8:02 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. And we'll continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Deborah.
This first one is called Help Shape the Future of the Police. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner is urging residents to share their views on the annual police budget precept consultation. The government is giving police and crime commissioners the flexibility to increase the policing precept of the council tax in 2022 by £10 a year, based on a Band D property, to fund the increasing demands on policing. For Band D properties, this would be an increase of 83 pence per month. For Band B properties, this would be an increase of 65 pence per month, or £7.77 per year, and that would be an increase of 4.4%. With over 60% of council taxpayers in the Hampshire Constabulary policing area living in properties that are Band A to C, the majority of people would see an increase of less than £10 a year. The Commissioner, Donna Jones, is asking local residents to complete an online survey and or sign up to a focus group to ensure that they have their say. Ms Jones said, "As your Police and Crime Commissioner, I am committed to ensuring that your police precept is spent wisely and delivers best value for money. I am committed to reducing wasteful spending across policing to ensure we employ the maximum number of police officers possible. Your support of an increase in the policing precept for the year ahead will be spent on increasing police numbers in order to detect more crime and improve our police service. In my police and crime plan, More Police, Safer Streets, I have committed to the recruitment of 600 additional police to complement the government's annual national uplift programme. Through the increased visibility of neighbourhood police officers, I want communities to be safer and feel safer too. With more police officers and better budgeting, you will see greater focus on tackling the crimes that matter to you, like antisocial behaviour, scams and fraud, as well as greater targeting of rural crime and tackling serious violent and knife crime. Long call wait times, repetitive messages, no feedback, and a perceived lack of action are some of the comments I have received about the 101 service. I will make it easier for you to report crime."
On a similar topic, A&E receives stab reports, not the police. Doctors and nurses in accident and emergency departments are increasingly being the ones who report stabbings but to the police, a crime commissioner has said. At a police and crime panel meeting at Hampshire County Council, Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones voiced her concerns over the police not being the first point of contact in stabbing incidents. Instead, those deep in the world of organised crime are either keeping quiet about their injuries or going straight to hospital without contacting police. This, Mrs. Jones added, means police don't have an accurate picture of the level of gang crime in these areas. She said, "What we know with organised crime is that when people are stabbed, they don't report that to the police. So it's often the doctors and nurses in A&E that uncover that somebody has a nasty 6 or 7 inch stab wound, which could have been fatal. It's really important that we're mapping what the level of harm is, because when you have organised crime gangs, they don't go to the police for help. They deal with it themselves. And we can't put adequate resources in if we don't know what's going on out there." In her report to councillors, Mrs. Jones added that for this financial year, £200,000 was awarded by the Ministry of Justice to put youth navigators in Hampshire hospitals. Youth navigators are full-time workers who support adolescents in hospitals who have complex social needs and caring and are in crisis. Portsmouth Hospital's University NHS Trust added that it works closely with police to report incidents related to both patients and staff. A spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "We know that some victims of knife crime may be unwilling or afraid to engage with police after an attack. Tackling and reducing knife crime is a priority for us. Working with partners and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Violence Reduction Unit."
Councillor, more action needed on air pollution. A Winchester City Councillor is pressing for more effort to clean up pollution-clogged city centre streets. Councillor Charles Ratcliffe says greater attention should be paid to new international standards produced by the World Health Organization, WHO, for air pollution from traffic. Currently, air quality is measured against the much weaker British government measures. Councillor Ratcliffe, a Liberal Democrat who lives on Parchment Street, close to the fume-filled St George's Street, says that, according to the WHO, levels of nitrogen dioxide and final particle pollution in the one-way system currently average between twice and three times the level deemed safe. He said, "The potential health impact goes beyond headaches, runny noses and itchy eyes. There is ample evidence of a link between poor air quality and a range of serious health conditions, from chronic lung disease to high blood pressure, strokes, heart disease and childhood development disorders. People with asthma and other respiratory illnesses are especially at risk, as is anyone with a lung infection." According to the Council's latest reports, dangerous levels of nitrogen dioxide and fine particulate matter have been recorded in the city centre every month in 2021. Levels of nitrogen dioxide in St George's Street, for example, have averaged between 25 and 30 micrograms per cubic metre since January. That's within the ceiling set by the national government, but way above the WHO's newly revised safe limit of 10 micrograms per cubic centimetre. And those are just the monthly averages. At one stage, levels of nitrogen dioxide reached 112 micrograms per cubic metre, more than 10 times the limit set by WHO. Winchester's air won't clean itself. Cutting traffic and improving air quality requires action at multiple levels. Better, more frequent bus services, more cycle lanes and more incentives to park on the edge of the city centre and walk the last half mile, rather than driving all the way in. We should be pressing the bus companies to move more quickly in replacing Winchester's dirty old diesel buses with modern, clean, electric or hydrogen models. We need to do more to deter high-polluting SUVs. And there's a picture, a very telling picture, of St George's Street, completely congested with traffic.
Dies after accidental overdose. A former nurse was found dead at her home after an accidental overdose of pain management medication. Isabella Rubinkovich-Dobrovska of Lime Tree Walk in Winchester was found dead at her home by police after a neighbour had raised welfare concerns on January the 24th. The inquest heard that she had a history of physical and mental health problems. A statement provided by Dr. Alex Charkin from St. Paul's Surgery, which was read out by Senior Coroner Christopher Wilkinson, told the inquest about her medical history. The statement explained how she'd been prescribed a range of medication to help manage her chronic pain, which included patches, and that the dosage was being changed regularly due to the severity of the pain. The inquest heard that Ms. Rubinkovich-Dobrovska, who was born in Poland, had struggled particularly when her son died in 2017 from a brain tumour. Evidence was also provided by PC Simon Reynolds from Hampshire Constabulary, who found the body at her home following a welfare concern raised by a neighbour. PC Reynolds explained that concerns were raised after she had not been seen for a few days by neighbours, with shopping bags left by the front door. PC Reynolds said, "The body was found on the upstairs landing. She had last been seen by a friend on January the 16th. and we have found out that it was the same friend who had left the shopping by her front door when he was unable to get her to come to the door. In his evidence, PC Reynolds also said that she was found to have had three patches on her arms, which were identified as the painkillers that had been prescribed. In the toxicology report provided by consultant pathologist Dr. Hayley Barnley, Ms. Rubinkovich-Dabroska was found to have levels of the painkiller patches which were in the fatality range. Mr. Wilkinson said she suffered with mental health problems which were affected by the death of her son. It's also clear that her mental health was affected by her physical health. She had been seen by the mental health team and was found to be at low risk of self-harm. She did struggle with chronic pain and was provided with medication for this. She died at her home address because of an unintentional overdose of pain management medication. The cause of death is therefore accidental death.
Nursery brings festive cheer to Winchester Care Home. Children at Kingsmead Day Nursery in Winchester sent a heartwarming message of festive cheer to elderly residents at a local care home. Brightly coloured Christmas cards and posters have been created and delivered by the Kingsmead children and staff to bring a smile to the faces of those living at St Catherine's View Care Home in Winchester. The Day Nursery, based in Gordon Road, wanted to support people living in the local community with the festive artwork, which will go on display at the home. And there is a photograph of a really long and big green Christmas banner saying Merry Christmas with all sorts of decorations on it that the children have put. And there are three smiling children helping to hold it up. Emily Walker, Managing Director at Kingsmead Day Nursery, said, "We were delighted to make the Christmas cards and posters to send our messages of love and peace at Christmas time to elderly people living in the community. It's been a tough and lonely year for many, and we thought that everybody would enjoy some Christmas cheer."
Smallholder fined over breach of court order. A smallholder in a village near Winchester has been fined £100 for breaking a court order. Robert Memory, 55, did not house cockerels between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. on July the 10th, 2020, at the holding he calls Gun Barrel Estate at Alsford Drove on the edge of South Wanston. Memory was present in court to admit the breach of the community protection notice imposed by the City Council. Magistrates in Basingstoke fined him £100 with a £34 victim surcharge and £60 costs. Memory's address on the court order was given as Mountbatten Place in Kingsworthy. He's been at loggerheads with his neighbours for years with numerous complaints about nuisance from his animals, including pigs. In 2018, he was fined for allowing cocks to crow in the early morning on the land, breaking a noise abatement order. He lost a planning appeal over an application to live in a motorhome and build barns on the site, and was ordered to leave the small holding where he lived in a motor caravan. Memory does not speak to the press, but on the Chronicle website in 2017, in a response to criticism, he wrote, "The land has always been a small holding called Lily Dale, before South Wanston existed. I do not have to leave the site, neither do the animals. I just cannot, according to the council, live on it. That is still to be decided by the courts, and not people like you, who don't even know what they're talking about."
Incredible skies light up landscapes. And this is about the Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club. Some amazing skies were captured by the Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club members this week of night skies and wildlife in the surrounding area. John Cleverly and Bev Parker photographed two striking sunrises with the red sky lighting up the morning landscape. This can also be seen at the end of the tunnel captured by Tina Georgiadis. Janet Kirby and Sally Holden also captured the sky with the clouds producing a vivid illusion of texture. Those interested in joining the group can do so via Facebook, and photos posted there may be used in the Hampshire Chronicle and its respective publications, websites and social media channels. By posting pictures in the group, you give consent for publication. Portraits, landscapes, wildlife shots, human interest images and news pictures, we welcome this all, and the article is accompanied by some of the photographs as described, but it does also include two dear little birds. One is a robin, all very fluffed up in the snow, and a green woodpecker climbing up a branch of a tree, looking for somewhere to peck, I guess.
Police and hospital scheme. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust and Hampshire Constabulary have joined forces as part of Operation Cavell, allowing both services to work closer together to prevent violence, abuse and aggression towards NHS staff. The introduction of Operation Cavell comes as more NHS staff face either violence or abuse in their roles, with the Trust having logged over 1,200 such incidents since 2018. The Hampshire Foundation Trust executive, Alex Wickfield, said, "No one should experience violence, abuse or intimidation at work. Unfortunately, it happens all too often for many of our colleagues. We are committed to ensuring that our staff, who do so much for so many, feel safe and supported at all times. Operation Cavell builds on our long-standing links with Hampshire Constabulary and will help us deliver on that commitment." Operation Cavell involves a new reporting strategy which makes it easier and clearer to identify the facts. The focus is on holding people accountable for their actions and learning from every incident to prevent any recurrence in the future. According to the Crown Prosecution Service, over 50% of NHS staff feel that being assaulted is just part of the job. However, in some cases, following the launch of Operation Cavell, the number of staff expecting to be abused at work has halved, and the number of convictions has increased by 20%. Following the announcement, Detective Inspector Abby Leeson from Hampshire Constabulary said, "I am pleased that Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust is taking such a proactive approach towards Operation Cavell."
Street drinking issue discussed by City Council. The issue of street drinking and begging in Winchester was raised at a meeting of the City Council amidst complaints from visitors to the city. Former councillor Ian Tate put the matter to the authorities' cabinet and called for more to be done to tackle the problem. Mr Tate said, "Does cabinet feel that we will ever resolve the issue of begging and street drinking, which I feel damages the impression visitors get of Winchester and who just don't know of all the huge and excellent efforts that take place to help disadvantaged people?" Councillor Angela Clear, cabinet member for Communities and Wellbeing, admitted that there have been complaints from people visiting Winchester. After the Chronicle published an article about the meeting, it garnered a number of comments from members of the public. One person wrote, said, "You don't get beggars and big issue sellers in shopping malls like West Quay or Festival Place. They are clean and tidy and warm and inviting. High streets like Winchester have their own charm, but let's not kid ourselves that that is enough to overcome the hassle of avoiding the drunks and beggars. As it happens, I do sometimes visit the city centre, but I avoid the areas where the drunks and beggars accumulate. And as a result, I haven't visited places like the Record Store in King's Walk for months, which was a favourite place to browse music." Another wrote, "Please don't let Winchester get like Oxford. You can't walk down the streets there without being asked for change, and some are quite aggressive." Someone else said, "Council urged to do more. What are they actually doing at the moment? Councillors admit there's a problem, but don't say what is currently being done to tackle it. I'm not saying they aren't doing anything, but there doesn't seem to be any evidence of it. Although, whose job is it to deal with drunks and beggars? Is it the council or is it the police?" One other commented, "Most people wouldn't hang around drinking alcohol in areas such as King's Walk because they know most other people would find it inconsiderate and even intimidating at times, and that they would possibly face a court fine for doing so. However, The drinkers in Winchester's public areas know they can get away with it. They take advantage, to the detriment of others, of the limited local policing power. Ultimately, councils are responsible for making public space protection orders and can do so on any public space. They must be satisfied on reasonable grounds that the behaviour to be restricted is having or is likely to have a detrimental effect on the quality of life of those in the locality and is or is likely to be persistent or continuing in nature. If the people in Winchester are seriously bothered about the issue, they could simply get residents' petition drafted.
More ambition needed in new movement strategy. Winchester Green campaigners are calling for more ambition in the city's new movement strategy. The County Council is, until February the 11th, consulting the public on the strategy which was formally approved last month. As reported, its proposal includes a park and ride on the north side of Winchester, a reduction in city centre parking, more cycling routes and a better public realm in the city centre to encourage more walking and cycling. Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis held a public meeting recently and said the strategy, which first emerged in 2019, is not ambitious enough. It says it's too reliant on electric vehicles, which will of themselves put huge new demands on electricity supplies. Winchester Action for Climate Change paper said, we will need almost six times more green electricity than is currently available. The scale of the demand will threaten a return to more electricity generated from gas. The group says there must be more effort to get people out of their cars and onto buses, cycles and to walk. As transport is responsible for nearly 60% of the district's carbon emissions, more needs to be done, especially as the City Council aims to make the district have net zero emissions by 2030. It adds, Andover Road Park and Ride will be expensive and must surely be superseded by the new Hampshire County Council target of a 10% reduction in traffic. Additional car parks will encourage greater car use. A park and ride on Andover Road will undermine Hampshire County Council's latest target of a 10% reduction in traffic. Proposals for reduction in city centre parking are an important development, but need to go much further, more quickly, if they're to succeed in reducing emissions sufficiently. The Winchester Movement Strategy from 2019 needs to reflect these developments. This is the best and perhaps the last chance to tackle transport emissions and remove traffic blight. It's unclear how plans for park and ride on Andover Road will be affected by the delays to the Ministry MOD, vacating the Sir John Moore Barrack site, now scheduled for 2026. Carla Holmes plans a smaller park and ride as part of the Kings Barton development. The Winchester for Action for Climate Change paper states, to move around the town, we need comprehensive networks of cycle and pedestrian routes and low traffic neighbourhoods. To access the town from the district and suburbs, we need a network of frequent low fare buses unhindered by traffic jams. We need to reserve Winchester Town Centre for cars used by residents and disabled people, delivery and emergency vehicles and buses.
City Council planning new wetland. A new wetland will be created in Mitchell Dever to remove nitrites from the environment if plans are given the go-ahead. Winchester City Council is planning to create a 0.54 hectare wetland in a meadow to the north of Waterloo Cottages and Barrion Close. Water will be delivered from and returned to a carrier stream of the River Deva. The scheme will generate nitrates credits for the council's affordable housing planning applications, which are now required. In a letter sent to local residents, the authority explained that the wetland will improve the meadow's appearance, protect it from future development, increase biodiversity, create new wildlife habitats and reduce flood risk. It continued, "The land was given to the council with the intention of being used for new housing, but because of the flood risk, it is not suitable for this development. Creating a wetland to support the council's planning application for new affordable housing developments in the district is therefore considered a suitable alternative of this land. It means that the chosen site will not be developed for housing. The wetland had been designed by the Aqua Science, wetland ecology specialists, and it includes 4 unlined, shallow ponds connected by wide open channels. Diverted water will be filtered as it passes from east to west across the site before being returned to the carrier stream." A City Council spokesman said, "Mitchell Dever has been selected because of its close proximity to the River Deva. Wetlands play an important role sustaining biodiversity as well as creating new wildlife habitats and reduced flood risks. Not only will this improve the meadow's appearance, it will help remove nitrates as water filters through the wetland." The Deva Society, local green campaigners, expressed some concerns in a statement. "On the face of it, the proposed wetland site at Mitchell Dever would appear to be a positive addition. However, at present, limited information is available in respect of this scheme. The Deva Society would be keen to hear further details as and when this becomes available. Certainly at this stage, it would seem that benefits from the introduction of a wetland may include increased biodiversity, potentially supporting and attracting species such as the great crested newt, stone curlew and snipe, should areas of the existing tussocky pasture grasses be retained. Nitrate mitigation would also feature, which is a benefit in any quantity. But this does, however, raise some concerns within the Deva Society over existing wildlife flora and fauna in this area, which at present do not appear to have been identified, as it is understood extensive excavation would be required in the creation of the wetland. The Deva Society would also welcome any proposals of community benefit of the wetland, such as a viewing platform, so people may interact, although likely to a limited extent, with the site. Any such proposals are yet to be explored."
Supermarket workers set to launch strikes. Strike action at Tesco could lead to empty shelves in the run-up to Christmas unless workers are offered a pay rise that keeps in line with inflation. Warehouse workers and heavy goods vehicle drivers at Tesco are to hold a series of strikes over pay in the coming weeks, but it is unclear if Central Hampshire will be affected. The strike, announced by the union Unite, is a result of Tesco offering the workers a 4% pay increase, which is below the current retail price index, inflation rate of 6%. Unite General Secretary Sharon Graham said, "Our members have gone above and beyond the call of duty to keep Tesco's shelves filled throughout the pandemic. At the very least, the UK's largest and wealthiest retailer should be making our members a decent pay offer. Unite always prioritises the jobs, pay and conditions of its members, and it will be giving full and total support to our members at Tesco until this dispute is resolved." The striking workers are based at Tesco's depots in Antrim, Belfast, Didcot and Doncaster. The Didcot and Doncaster sites will see an initial 48 hours stoppage beginning at 6 a.m. on Thursday, December the 16th. This will be followed by a further 5-day pre-Christmas stoppage beginning on Monday, December the 20th. There'll be a further 48-hour stoppage on Thursdays, December the 30th, and a 3-day stoppage beginning on January the 5th, 2022, at Doncaster and Didcot.
Christmas tree erected in nave. A giant Christmas tree has been installed in Winchester Cathedral. The tree has been funded by the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, with the installation taking place last week. The team of gardeners and the works department hoisted the tree into position. The tree was then dressed with lights and topped with a star using a cherry picker. Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "We're so grateful to the Friends for continuing to support one of the great Christmas traditions at Winchester Cathedral. The arrival and installation of the giant Christmas tree is a cherished practice that is still going strong, and we hope it brings a real sense of the joy, wonder and hope within the Christmas story to all that visit over the coming weeks. There will also be four large extra trees to discover in the cathedral, including a tree of hope, where visitors can share their hopes and prayers for the coming year by adding a personal message to the tree. The remaining three trees can be found around the different areas of the cathedral, each with their own themes that represent faith, light and love. Each year, the giant tree is funded by the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, an independent charity that was set up in 1931 to support the cathedral. The Friends have 3,000 members in Winchester, Hampshire and beyond. The Friends provide annual grants of £70,000 to the cathedral, and the funds pay for the girls' choir, two boy choristers, the broderers, the maintenance of the trees and paths in the close, as well as the cathedral Christmas tree each year. The members of the Friends enjoy an extensive programme of talks, trips and events. During previous lockdowns, the talks moved online to Zoom, and every few weeks around 100 Friends enjoyed coming together to learn about various historical topics connected with the cathedral, and there are photographs showing the tree being hoisted up, and the final photograph, it appears to be illuminated with a sort of purple floodlights. And the tree is standing in front of the stained glass window, and this lovely photograph looking up to the cathedral roof.
Magnificent performance of Handel's Messiah. The Wainfleet Singers' Messiah in Winchester Cathedral on December the 3rd. Despite its wide-ranging biblical texts, Handel's Messiah has for many years become a staple of Christmas concerts across Europe. This was magnificently demonstrated for a packed cathedral audience by a truly celebratory performance by Winchester's Wainfleet Singers under their director, cathedral organist Andrew Lumsden. However, there was nothing routine about the choir's work, nor that of the professional period orchestra Florilegium and the outstanding quartet of solo singers. Paced well for drama, and for the building's acoustic, over 2 hours of music had momentum and passion. For the choir, there was a dance-like quality to movements such as "For unto us a child is born." Power in "The Lord gave the word," fierce enunciation in "He trusted in God," and similar vigour in "Let us break their bonds asunder." The final chorus and its epic Amen combined radiant vocal tone and dynamics, graded to produce a glorious climax. Throughout, a highly unified and rich soprano line dominated the very musical Wainfleet Singers. The men's voices had to project more to compensate for their smaller numbers, but all sections were alert to their conductor's directions and were appropriately balanced by the chamber orchestral forces. A cathedral audience couldn't have wished for a better team of soloists. After a cleanly delivered overture, the first words were arrestingly delivered by former cathedral chorister, now internationally recognised tenor, Benjamin Hullett. All his soloed contributions were from memory, with impeccable diction and a resonant, focused tone which was perfect in this setting. Bass, Matthew Brooke, has a dramatic stage presence and the ability to colour the moods of his solos with great control of his powerful voice. The Wainfleet Singers produced a special programme booklet to mark their first half century with many enthusiastic comments from choir members past and present. Let us hope such loyalty helps entice new recruits to this much-respected city asset.
Funding awarded to Winchester charities. Two Winchester charities have received a helping hand from Carla Homes, being awarded over £3,600 as part of the Home Builders Community Bursary Initiative. Winchester Hospice Fundraising Charity and Winchester Beacon were awarded the funds from the initiative, which will award over £100,000 this year to good causes. Winchester Hospice fundraising charity is raising money towards the delivery of enhanced care and support for patients and their loved ones. Located in the grounds of Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the hospice opened in September following the success of a £4.4 million community-backed fundraising campaign to transform Burrell House into a 10-bed inpatient facility. Winchester Hospice, which has received a donation of £2,286 from Carla Holmes, is run by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. Nick Vaughan, chair of Winchester Hospice fundraising charity, said thank you to Carla Holmes for this kind and generous donation. This much appreciated contribution will help the charity to fund and deliver enhanced care for hospice patients and their loved ones, something which could not be delivered without crucial fundraising support from the local community and organisations like Carla Holmes. Meanwhile, the Winchester Beacon, which offers a night shelter service, received £1,400 from Carla Holmes, with funds going towards putting together a programme of activities for residents currently at the shelter. Michelle Price, Chief Executive at Winchester Beacon, said, "The funding from Carla Holmes has enabled us to employ an activities coordinator to develop a programme of events and activities for our residents. Often, our residents have forgotten what they're good at and what they enjoy doing, because for so long life has been about survival. Our activities are aimed at building self-esteem and confidence, developing new skills, and also making time to relax and have fun." Carla Holmes invited entries for the community bursary scheme earlier this year. Alison Deacon, Sales and Marketing Director at Carla Holmes Thames, said, "We are delighted to be supporting the work of both the Winchester Hospice fundraising charity and the Winchester Beacon, which have both had a huge impact on the Winchester community. We are looking forward to seeing how the bursary funding will help support their visions and provide further support to the community. At Carla Holmes, we are committed to making a lasting contribution to the communities in which we build, and the community bursary is a way of supporting those projects that matter to local people."
That concludes the extract for the week ending the 10th of December 2021. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd, and thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address or label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.